In the meantime, the companions of Lord Chaitanya, who reached the temple a little after, could not see the Lord there, but they heard about the incidents of the Lord's transcendental feats and his being carried away by the Bhattacharya from the men who were still gossiping on the incidents. One of them by chance met Gopinathacharya, known to Gadadhar Pandit, and both of them greeted each other. From him it was learnt that the Lord was lying in unconscious state at the residence of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who happened to be the brother-in-law of Gopinathacharya. All the members of the party were introduced by Gadadhar Pandit to Gopinathacharya, and the latter took them all to the house of Bhattacharya, where the Lord was lying unconscious in spiritual trance. All the members then chanted loudly the holy name of the Lord Hari, as usual, and the Lord regained his consciousness. After this, Bhattacharya received all the members of the party, including Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and asked them to become his guest of honor. The party, including the Lord, went for a bath in the sea, and the Bhattacharya arranged for their residence and meals properly at the house of Kashi Mishra, with the attention of Gopinathacharya, his brother-in-law. There was some friendly talks about the Lord's divinity between the two brother-in-laws, and in this argument Gopinathacharya, who knew the Lord before, also wanted to establish that the Lord was the personality of Godhead. But the Bhattacharya wanted to establish him as one of the great devotees. Both of them argued from the angle of vision of authentic shastras, and not on the strength of sentimental vox populi. The incarnations of God are known in terms of the authentic shastras, and not on the cause, and not on the popular votes, as it is the practice amongst the foolish fanatics. Because Lord Chaitanya was incarnation of God in fact, foolish fanatics have pushed forward so many so-called incarnations of God in this age, or after Lord Chaitanya, and that also without any reference of the authentic scriptures. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, or Gopinathacharya, did not indulge in such foolish sentimentalism. On the contrary, both of them wanted to establish him, the Lord, on the strength of authentic shastras. Later it was disclosed that Bhattacharya was also hailing from the Navadvip area, and it was understood from him that Nilambar Chakrabarti, the maternal grandfather of Lord Chaitanya, happened to be a class fellow of the father of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. In that sense, the young sannyasi Lord Chaitanya attracted a filial affection from the side of Bhattacharya. Bhattacharya was the professor of many sannyasins in the order of the Shankaracharya Sampradaya, and he himself also belonged to that cult. As such, the Bhattacharya desired that the young sannyasi Lord Chaitanya may also hear from him about the teachings of Vedanta. Those who are followers of the Shankar cult are generally known as the Vedantist. It does not, however, mean that Vedanta is a monopoly study of Shankar Sampradaya. Vedanta is studied by all the bona fide Sampradayas, but they have their own interpretations. But the Shankar Sampradaya is generally known as the Vedantist without any knowledge of the Vedantist Vaishnavas. For this reason, Bhaktivedanta title was first offered to the author by the Vaishnavas. The Lord agreed to take lessons from Bhattacharya on the Vedanta, and they sat together in the temple of Lord Jagannath. The Bhattacharya went on speaking continually for 7 days, and the Lord heard him with all attention, without any interruption. This dumb-like hearing of the Lord before the Bhattacharya raised some doubts in his heart, and he asked the Lord how it was that he did not ask anything good or bad in the matter of hearing the explanations of Vedanta. The Lord posed himself before the Bhattacharya as a foolish student, and pretended that he heard the Vedanta from him because he wanted him to do so as the duty of a sannyasi. Otherwise, hardly he could follow or understand the lectures delivered by him. By this, the Lord indicated that the so-called Vedantists among the Shankar Sampradaya, or any other Sampradaya who do not follow the instructions of Srila Vyasadeva, are mechanical student of the Vedanta, without any introspection within the great knowledge. The explanation of the Vedanta Sutras is given by the author himself in the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone who has no study or knowledge in the Bhagavatam will hardly be able to know what the Vedanta says. The Bhattacharya, as a vastly learned man, could follow the sarcastic remarks on the popular Vedantist by the Lord. He therefore asked him why he did not question on any point which he could not follow. The Bhattacharya could understand the purpose of his dead silence for the days he heard him. This shows clearly that the Lord had something else in his mind, and he requested him to disclose his mind. Janmadyas yayata shastra yonitvat aktato brahmaji gyanasa. Of the Vedanta Sutras, but when you explain them in your own way, it becomes difficult for me to follow them. The purpose of the sutras is already explained in them, but your explanations are just like covering them with something else. You do not purposely take the direct meaning of the sutras, but indirectly you give your own interpretations. The Lord thus attacked all Vedantists who interpret the Vedanta Sutras fashionably, according to their limited power of thinking, and also to serve their own purpose. Such indirect interpretation of the authentic literatures like the Vedanta is hereby condemned by the Lord. The Lord continued to say, Srila Vyasadeva has summarized the direct meanings of the mantras in Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutras. Unfortunately, you do not take the direct meaning of them, and indirectly you interpret them in a different way. The authority of the Vedas is unchallengeable and goes without any question of doubt, and whatever is stated in the Vedas must be accepted in toto, otherwise it becomes a challenge to the authority of the Vedas. The conch shell and cow dung are bone and stool of two living beings, but because they have been recommended by the Vedas as pure, people accept them as such, and that is the authority of the Vedas. The idea is that nobody can apply his imperfect reason on the authority of the Vedas. The orders of the Vedas must be obeyed, as it is without any mundane reasoning. The so-called followers of the Vedic injunction make out their own interpretations of the Vedic injunctions, and thus they establish different parties and sect of the Vedic religion. Lord Buddha directly denied the authority of the Vedas, and he established his own religion. For this reason only, the Buddhist religion was not accepted by the strict followers of the Vedas. But those who are so-called followers of the Vedas are more harmful than the Buddhist. The Buddhist has the courage to deny the Vedas directly, but the so-called followers of the Vedas have no courage to deny the Vedas, and indirectly they disobey all the injunctions of the Vedas. Lord Chaitanya condemned this class of followers of the Vedas. The example of the conch shell and that of the cow dung given by the Lord is very much appropriate in this connection. If somebody argues that cow dung is the stool of a living creature, and therefore the stool of a learned Brahman will be still more pure, that sort of argument will not be accepted. The cow dung will be accepted, and the stool of a highly posted Brahman will be rejected with equal abhorrence. The Lord therefore continued to say, The Vedic injunctions are self-authorized, and if some mundane creature wants to adjust the interpretations of the Vedas, certainly he will commit blunder upon the authority of the Vedas. It is foolish to think of oneself as more intelligent than Srila Vyasadeva. He has already expressed himself in his sutras, and there is no need of help from personalities of lesser importance. His setup of the Vedanta sutras are as much dazzling as the midday sun, and when somebody wants to give his own interpretations on the self-effulgent, sun-like Vedanta Sutras, certainly such person attempts to cover the sun with a kind of cloud of one's own imagination. The purpose of the Vedas and Puranas are one and the same. They want to ascertain the absolute truth, and the absolute truth is greater than everything else. The absolute truth is ultimately realized as the absolute personality of Godhead, with absolute controlling power. As such, the absolute personality of Godhead must be completely full of opulence, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. And as such, the transcendental personality of Godhead is astonishingly ascertained as impersonal. The impersonal description of the absolute truth in the Vedas is meant for nullifying the mundane conception of the absolute whole. Personal features of the Lord is completely distinguished from all kinds of mundane features. The living entities are all individual persons, and they all are parts and parcels of the supreme whole. If the parts and parcels are individual persons, the source of their emanation must not be impersonal. He is the supreme person amongst all the relative persons. The Vedas inform us that from him, Brahman, everything emanates, and on him only everything rests. And after annihilation, everything merges in him only. Therefore, he is the ultimate dative, causative, and accommodating cause of all causes. And all these causes cannot be ascertained to an impersonal object. The Vedas inform us that he alone becomes many, and when he so desires, he puts his glance over the material nature. Before his such glance over the material nature, there was no material cosmic creation. And therefore, his glancing over the material nature is certainly not one of material creation. Material mind or senses were unborn when the Lord placed his glance over the material nature, and all these evidences of the Vedas prove it without any doubt that the Lord has transcendental eyes and mind distinguished from the material one. His impersonality, therefore, is negation of material, but not denial of his transcendental personality. Brahman means ultimately the personality of Godhead. Impersonal Brahman realization is just the negative conception of the mundane creations. Paramatma realization is localized aspect of Brahman within all kinds of material bodies. Ultimately, the supreme Brahma realization is the realization of the personality of Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna is that supreme personality of Godhead, according to all evidences of the revealed scriptures. He is the ultimate source of Vishnu tattvas. The Puranas are also supplementary to the Vedas. The Vedic mantras are too stiff for an ordinary man. Women, Sudras, and the so-called twice-born higher castes are unable to penetrate into the sense of the Vedas. And thus the Itihasa, or the Mahabharata, as well as the Puranas, are made easy to explain the truths of the Vedas. In the prayers of Brahma before the boy Sri Krishna, he said that there is no limit of the fortune of the residents of Brajabhumi, headed by Sri Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai, because the eternal absolute truth has become their intimate relative. The Vedic mantra describes that the absolute truth has no legs and no hands, and yet goes faster than all, and accepts everything that is offered to him in devotion. These statements of going faster or accepting everything by hand definitely suggest the personal features of the Lord, although he is distinguished from mundane hands and legs or other senses.